Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. And be part of Peter B.'s America.
Time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show. Every week about this time, we set aside an hour to talk about the crucial process of our democracy, elections. Our go-to guy is citizen journalist Brad Friedman. He's the proprietor of bradblog.com, and he's been doing this for 5 years. Sometimes it's kind of like Groundhog Day.
You had to rub it in, didn't you?
Where the stories just won't go away. And today we offer callers to the program a free DVD of Murder, Spies, and Voting Lies, the Clint Curtis story, because... Well, that story's back in the news. We'll give you details in a moment. Later this hour, Noah Kunin is going to join us. He is a citizen journalist covering the Al Franken Norm Coleman post-election contests in Minnesota. And Brad has connected us with Noah, and it's I'm looking forward to talking with him. You know what we learned? Nick was doing some Googling, and it turns out that Noah was one of the first people who arrived at the scene of the bridge collapse when Highway 35 West collapsed in Minneapolis a couple of years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Was he already working with the uptake.org at that point?
We're going to have to ask him. I don't know. But
very good to know. He's doing a tremendous job covering this trial, which I might add is absolutely excruciating. I've been doing my best to keep up with it throughout the week. It's really incredible. I won't go into too much detail because I know you want to we'll get to it when Noah joins us at the bottom of the hour, but man alive, I'll tell you this. If Democrats fought for every vote the way these Republicans are doing in this election contest and in others whenever they feel they're close enough to win, boy, we'd have, either President Gore or President Kerry right around now, I'm quite certain, because, I mean, they are really working every vote without fear that they will be called a sore loser, crybaby, tinfoil hat-wearing conspiracy theorist. They are pulling out all the stops and pulling out so many stops that they're even arguing that ballots should now be counted that they had previously argued should not be counted.
Well, and you know what it is?
Yeah.
The conservatives have no shame. And Al Gore, at a certain point, had shame and felt that he would destroy the republic if he fought for his rights. John Kerry didn't flirt with shame at all. He gave up real quickly. But we really see that they have no shame, and they'll say what it takes, do whatever it takes. And this is how I end up comparing them to the evildoer in the NFL, Al Davis of the Oakland Raiders. Just win, baby. Don't tell me how. You can clip all you want.
Well, that's exactly it. And remember, they did the same thing, if you recall, back in 2006 up in Washington State, where they, or was that 2004? I've lost track already. I think it was 2004, where they, you know, felt that they had a contest there, and they went all the way to the mat. And they charged fraud, and they made their noise, and they did everything they could. In the end, it turned out they proved, not only did they not prove fraud, but they didn't even submit any evidence of fraud. They were willing to go out and say there was fraud, even though there wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when that happens, when they do that, they are respected by the other side. You know, nobody has been, I haven't seen any, you know, blogs set up to claim that Norm Coleman is trying to steal the election in Minnesota. But we did see that from the other side during the hand count. Now, that Republican blog that had been set up to claim that Franken was stealing the election has gone quiet since around November, since Franken went ahead by some 225 votes.
Mm-hmm.
But they are absolutely shameless. They will say anything. I'll give you just one case in point. A the case of a ballot that was rejected because the voter happened to have been in prison when he voted. He voted in the wrong county because the prison was in the wrong county, but in any case, convicted felons are not allowed to vote in Minnesota, and yet the Republicans were in there fighting to count this guy's vote. Now, Eric Kleefeld, who's also been doing a tremendous job of covering the race, the contest over at TPM's DC blog, noted that could you imagine the uproar we would hear in the media if Democrats had gone in there and tried to argue not only for a felon to have his vote counted, but a felon who isn't even supposed to be voting and was voting in the wrong county.
Mm-hmm.
They will do anything, and to underscore that, they've now brought in this reprehensible Ben Ginsburg.
Oh, yeah.
Remember him?
Yeah, yeah.
Florida 2000. He was really the architect of that election contest. And when he argued, you know, we shouldn't count votes, now he's in there arguing, oh, we should count anything and everything we can. So it's 2000 all over again, but
well,
somehow
Brad, you don't,
opposite.
You don't understand the Ginsburg rule. And that is when you're ahead, you don't count votes. And when you're behind, you count every vote.
And that's exactly what they've been fighting for. They've been, fighting for ballots that during the hand count phase they had objected to and wouldn't allow to be counted. There was one of them, for example, where the voter had signed on the wrong line. Well, to me, I think that vote should be allowed in. But during the hand count, Coleman didn't want it in. Now, of course, he's changed his mind. He wants it in now that he's losing. It's unbelievable.
Brad Friedman with us from bradblog.com. Lines open if you have a question or a comment about election issues. 888-5 Peter B. All right, well, we're going to head to a break now, and right after this break, we're going to be joined by Noah Kunin from Minneapolis. And if you want to check out his website before we get him on, it's theuptake.com, T-H-E-uptake.com.
.org.
Oh, it's .org.
I think it. Maybe it's both.
We'll double check. Yeah, you try it, I'll try it, and we'll confirm that after the break.
Very good.
Brad Friedman with me from bradblog.com. And my toll-free number is 888-5 Peter B. This is the Peter B. Collins Show, right from San Francisco. How about that?
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
This is how we do it.
Yeah, you want to fix an election? First you say, don't count those ballots. Then you say, oh, we got to count these ballots.
This is how we do it. It's Friday night, and I feel all right. The party's here on the west side. So I reach for my 40 and I turn it up. Designated driver, take the keys to my truck.
We continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, and we're joined by Noah Kunin, who is on the scene in Minnesota. And Brad, of course, you were correct. It is theuptake.org. I was misinformed when I said .com.
I accept your apology.
Well, yeah, you got it. So, first of all, Noah, welcome to our program.
It's good to be here.
Now, we did a little search with the Google gods and found out that you were right on the scene when the bridge collapsed there in Minneapolis a few years ago.
That is correct. That is correct. I was living in a warehouse apartment at the time, and it just so happened to be the closest residence to the bridge itself.
Uh-huh.
And I was at home when it happened.
Wow. And how far do you go back as an activist and citizen journalist?
I started a blog called blankedout.com in 2006, mainly just trying to do a bit of analysis here and there to give a better understanding of the political movements in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. And did you have some connection to the campaign of Senator Klobuchar?
No, not at all. That's actually a popular misconception. I was actually doing stories on both Klobuchar and her opponent, Representative Mark Kennedy, was never paid for, never declared, you know, alignment at all.
Mm-hmm.
But once I published a story that was unflattering to Mark Kennedy's media consultant, Scott Howell, it then became prudent for Republicans to label me some shadow Democrat operative. And
I see.
In some ways, maybe I wish I had. I probably would have been paid better as opposed to zero.
And the Googles don't have a correction department, do they?
The Googles do not have a correction department. You know, what's popular gets at the top, and it was a popular story.
Yeah. All right, Brad, you take over here and tell me how you connected with Noah and what you learned from their up-close and personal coverage of the Franken-Coleman contest in Minnesota.
Yeah, because before we get into the details of the Franken-Coleman case, Noah, great to talk to you. On that Minnesota bridge case, were you working with the Uptake at that time, or did the Uptake only come around in the last few months?
Well, that was in August of 2007, and as an idea, the Uptake had been percolating a few months previous.
Yeah.
And it was actually in part because of not only my coverage of the bridge collapse, but citizen journalists all over the state that the Uptake was able to sort of initiate and start right then. So I was brought on board the next month.
I got you. Well, listen, the way I found Noah was the way so many others, I'm sure, are finding him right now, through extraordinarily good coverage via theuptake.org. I mean, they are doing a tremendous job videotaping, live streaming absolutely everything that's going on right now in the election contest. They were up yesterday in the Minnesota Supreme Court. We can get details on that in a second, but it was watching his live reports that have just been so impressive, and I want to ask everyone to please go to theuptake.org, throw them a few bucks, because they are really covering this, and, well, as I'm sure we'll see in the future, so many other stories the way they should be covered, the way it seems like only citizen journalists can seem to cover these stories these days.
Well, the corporate media has declared they're bored with the post-election contest there in Minnesota.
Exactly right. They'll wait until there's a finding from the court. They'll jump in. But, you know, the stuff going on every day and the stuff that we're seeing and, frankly, the hypocrisy that we're seeing right now in the Coleman case, where they're arguing for so many ballots to be included that they had, you know, fought to keep out before, is really astounding. So, Noah, if you can, and I know you've been taking in a lot of this now for the past 2 weeks, not easy to summarize, but just where the hell are we in this Franken-Coleman election contest as you see it?
I really wish I knew. You know, I've been covering the recount and the contest since day one after Election Day, you know, full time. Before that, you know, I've been covering the race for pretty much the entirety of the race. So I've been with these guys for a while. I'm trying to figure out where we are is like being in a fog with a blindfold on. Basically, where we are right now is the judges have created a process by which the Coleman campaign is presenting evidence on each rejected absentee ballot individually. So they're individually going through a universe of 4,797 rejected absentee ballots that the Coleman campaign either knows or suspects, according to evidence, you know, that they've collected, was improperly rejected. Oftentimes, once they finally get somebody on, you know, as a witness, and they start to examine the information, they sometimes retract the ballot. They're like, oh, you know what, we're okay with this ballot now. And other times they keep the ballot in and say, hey, you know, we do want this to eventually be opened. But
and these are in some of these
horrifically
cases,
slow.
Some of these cases, Noah, they've actually brought in witnesses on the stand, voters whose ballots were rejected, and then they found out only once they got to the stand that they were properly rejected because the girlfriend forged the guy's signature or something like that.
Yeah, that's the most outrageous case, properly. But basically what the initial Coleman argument was, well, there's four statutory reasons to reject an absentee ballot. The Coleman campaign's argument initially was, well, those might be mandatory before the election. But now the election is over, they're discretionary. They could be, you know, thrust aside. That argument didn't exactly go over well with the three-judge tribunal. They issued a ruling saying they would only hear evidence
in cases where voters complied with the four statutes, or in cases where their noncompliance wasn't due to their own fault, but some outside force, like an election official making a mistake.
And that's
so that
how
limited the universe a bit.
And that's how we get down from the 11,000 ballots that Coleman wanted considered down now to the just 4,797 ballots that the three-judge panel has allowed to be considered, correct?
More or less, that's correct. Basically, the Coleman campaign suspects there might be additional ballots in the remaining universe that fits those categories, but because they didn't file specifically on any additional ballots beyond the 4,797, the judges had to determine some point at which the outlines of this trial were going to be confirmed, and the date they chose was the date at which the Coleman campaign had, by that point, had filed 4,797. That being said, the Coleman campaign has been withdrawing ballots left and right. They've withdrawn certain categories of ballots. They're not being extremely transparent about that. The universe is probably closer to 4,400 right now. That's a guesstimate based on, you know, several statements from the Coleman campaign. Again, still a very large universe, though.
And you did a study, am I correct? Because I caught part of this during your coverage today. You did a study looking at those ballots and making an estimate of just how exactly the numbers would change if, in fact, all of those ballots that Norm Coleman once counted were actually counted.
Right. And so this article just came out today. It's on theuptake.org right now if you scroll down. Basically, what I did is looked at the post-recount numbers from all the different counties. And the supposition, and this is just one of many scenarios we're going to be releasing the numbers on. The first scenario is, well, if you're an absentee ballot voter, you're probably more or less like any other voter. And even in those numbers, most absentee ballots were accepted. So the post-recount percentages reflect the wishes of absentee voters. So if we superimpose post-recount county results onto the absentee ballots Norm Coleman would like to see opened and counted, we get a general idea of the tone or the temperature of that universe. And what comes out is actually an 85 net vote gain for Franken, which makes common sense. A, Democrats and Al Franken were shown to have done much better among absentee voters, roughly about 8%. And furthermore, Al Franken did much better in the metropolitan areas of Minnesota, and because those areas were bigger, they had more rejected absentee ballots, and thus are overwhelmingly the portion of the Coleman universe.
So you're suggesting that even if Norm Coleman gets all of these ballots that he wants now to be reconsidered, if those are in fact counted, he may end up losing votes in the process.
Oh, it's entirely right now, I'd say it's entirely possible. What's probable is a little bit more confusing. What I'd say right now is Coleman, what is clear from this study or any of the studies we're going to be releasing, is Coleman has to significantly outperform his post-recount election results in counties in order to overtake the 225 Franken lead and then add at least one more ballot to his total.
But he has been cherry-picking which ballots it is that he wants included, presumably from precincts that favored him. Is that taken into account in your study?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we basically take the Coleman campaign on its word that they want all of these ballots, and anyone the Coleman campaign individually targeted as Tolman supporters are in there. But for example, in a bizarre twist of fate, I found out I'm in there, and I'm not going to reveal who I voted for, but what it's clear is in many, many circumstances, I mean, this is a large universe, the Coleman campaign or the Republican Party of Minnesota didn't have sufficient targeting data, and so added whole classes of voters into the rolls where they felt like there might be some bit of a chance the judges might rule those ballots are improperly rejected and thus add them. When you're behind, you want the biggest pie possible.
Right. We're talking with Noah Kunin in Minneapolis. You can read his work at theuptake.com.
Pardon me.
There we go. I got to change my notes here. .org. And Noah, tell us a little more. We won't ask you how you voted. That's your private business. But what was it like to be covering this and then find out that your ballot was being scrutinized and, in fact, had been rejected?
After covering this race for more than a year and after covering the recount and election contest, you know, 50 hours a week nonstop, it pretty much blew my mind. The reason I hadn't found it earlier is when the Coleman campaign took the county materials, they typed them up again and introduced a typo into my name, so it never came up in my searches. I was rather surprised because
I've voted absentee more or less every election because I'm usually working on election day, you know, doing coverage. So I was actually in Grant Park on election day this year, and I thought I had followed all the instructions correctly. What it turned out happened is it was my impression that when I asked for the application for an absentee ballot, I registered at the same time. I put in a registration card. Well, that registration card, poof, who knows where it went. So the time I resubmitted my absentee ballot, I was registered in an older precinct from the past election. And because they didn't have me on the rolls, they marked rejected. So the Coleman argument about my ballot and ballots similarly situated is this. Even though I wasn't registered in the precinct where my ballot ended up, I was registered somewhere in Minnesota. And that's true. I had a current registration. And because the Senate race is a statewide race, as long as you have a valid registration somewhere in the state, we should count their Senate votes of ballots like mine or those similarly situated.
And then what is your position then on your own ballot? given these details.
It's a recent development. At least in the short term, I have an evolving opinion regarding my own ballot. But because I'm covering this so intently, I think I'm going to keep that to myself currently. However, there are some big decisions that are before the judges that they're going to start having to make orders on. In fact, we're going to have a motions day on President's Day where no trial is going to be held. They're just going to get through as many motions as they can. Once the outline of what the law seems to be in this case, because there are some ambiguities that need to be resolved, I might then take a position as to my own ballot. But at this point, it's entirely possible I'm going to get called into the witness stand have to make some declarations there.
Okay, let's take a break and we'll continue. We're talking with Noah Kunin, and it's theuptake.org. I'm finally getting it correct. Brad Friedman will continue with us here as we roll on here. 888-5-PETER-B if you have a question or comment. And, of course, bradblog.com is where you can catch Brad's reporting. More in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Peter B. Collins, midnight to 3 a.m. weekdays. On demand anytime at green960.com.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 9 minutes in front of the hour. We continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com and Noah Kunin from Minneapolis. Theuptake.org is the website where they've been covering the Al Franken Norm Coleman post-election contest. And, Noah, I'll hand it back to Brad in a second, but Steve and Salinas wanted to ask, wouldn't it have been simpler just to rerun this election?
It may have been simpler, but as your viewers may or may not know, Minnesota is in the throes of a incredible budget crunch, much like the rest of the state government.
You got nothing on California.
Been quite expensive. That being said, the counterargument is, wasn't all this really expensive? Well, the catch being is that in the election contest phase, the loser pays. So if Coleman, in fact, is not successful in this contest in changing the result, he's got to pay.
Well, and we are paying a price in that Minnesota is missing a senator. The Democrats are missing a senator right now in the Senate. And I think Noah and I may have talked about this earlier this week, but I did a little bit of arcane filibuster math for you over at Brad Blog, where I looked into the rules, the Senate rules, and it's actually the number needed to defeat a filibuster is actually based on the number of seated senators. And I've argued that the Democrats should not seat the replacement for Judd Gregg, the Republican replacement for Judd Gregg, until they finally seat Franken, because the fact is, as soon as Judd leaves the Senate, that means only 59 are required to overcome a filibuster at that point. So the Democrats will only need to get one vote. And their one vote is sort of being hijacked by what looks like it could be an endless trial at this point. This could go on for months out there in Minnesota.
That's very true, especially at the rate we're going right now. You know, I believe today we might have gotten through roughly 14 or 15 ballots.
Ouch.
I believe yesterday we got through 11.
It's
got to be clear to the judges that this process can't continue as is, and that, you know, after President's Day, this thing's got to kick into a different system, a different process, which moves it forward at a much faster speed. You know, it's hard to gauge what Minnesotans are feeling right now about this whole state of affairs. You know, but I do think the winds may be changing as the lack of two senators is impressed upon the populace. I was handed a petition, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, but basically it summarizes that, you know, if we don't get another senator soon, we should be exempt from 50% of all taxes until we are such fully represented. Since, you know, taxation, no taxation without representation.
Well, throw a tea party and see what happens.
Or Klobuchar can have two votes. Noah, you didn't want to go into your personal opinion on your own personal ballot. I will. I think it should be counted. I've long argued that absentee ballots are too easily discarded, and even in a state like Minnesota, where you've got one of the best secretaries of state, and I was chatting with Secretary of State Mark Ritchie a little bit about this today. You know, you've got the same day registration out there, and yet it all comes down to, again, these absentee ballots. It's not the so-called acorn voter fraud at the polling place on election day. It never is. It comes back to these absentee ballots, and many people, like you, are just disenfranchised without notice. And have you come to an opinion watching all of this as far as how these ballots are so easily thrown out and whether voters should be given a chance, should be notified when there is some reason, in your case, a technical reason, why your ballot was not being counted?
I do think we do need a better notification system. We do have a notification system here in Minnesota. The issues with it is that there's a certain date at which notifications are not sent out. And even before that date, while it is greatly suggested notifications are sent out, there is simply often not the manpower to do it. So some form of automation or expansion of early voting enfranchisement might be the solution, because right now we have a process where we don't technically have early voting in Minnesota. You know, absentee balloting is separate from traditionalized early voting. That being said, more and more people have been engaging the absentee process and overloading it because it's not designed for that type of overwhelming attendance. So it is clear that some reforms do need to be made.
Which is why, you know, and Minnesota really is one of the best states in the nation. Ritchie really is one of the best secretaries of state, and yet we still see the flaws in the system. We still see a system where you've got people who are not professionals judging whether a signature matches or doesn't. And I think we're seeing thousands of people in states all around the country who are being disenfranchised. I think that's a pity. Do you have time real quickly to give us a real quick catch up on where we are in the other case in the Minnesota Supreme Court where Franken pled his a different case yesterday?
Sure. Basically, what happened yesterday is arguing a federal statute, the Franken team demanded the issuance of a temporary or provisional election certificate that would put Franken as the current lead vote-getter into the Senate until the election contest came to a decision that someone else got the most number of votes. The Coleman response is that there's a Minnesota statute saying, hey, an election certificate cannot be issued until the election contest is over. This all hinges on definition of the proper court and what that really means. Long story short, are they going to go with what the federal law says or with state law says? Does the federal law allow for room in the states to make a law preventing a senator from going up? You know, we've been actually trying to do a little bit of research and seeing what is the longest period of time a state has gone without a senator. And I think it might be the John Thune case, if I'm not correct, where he had a stroke and was gone for about a year.
Oh, no, not John Thune.
It's, the other one from South
Dakota. Tim Johnson.
Johnson in South Dakota, yeah.
Right, Thune was his opponent. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No, Thune defeated Daschle. They're separate
South
seats.
South Dakota and politics.
Yeah.
Right. And Johnson was, in fact, the seat was not vacant, even though he was unable to vote, as Ted Kennedy has not been able to vote either. So there's another vote right now that the Democrats need. But
So I don't even know if that would even match up with this as far as a vacant seat goes.
And we're just about out of time, guys. But Noah, what you just described there in the Franken Supreme Court case has shadows of Bush v. Gore. But that Supreme Court case was non-precedential. So it appears that we could talk about it, but it wouldn't matter. So, gentlemen, thank you very much. It's great to meet you, Noah, and thank you for the work you're doing. People can follow it at theuptake.org. And Brad Friedman, thank you very much, sir. We'll talk to you again next week.
Always my pleasure. Look forward to it.
All right. Brad Friedman, bradblog.com.
Happy trails to you.
And I'm overdue for a little scotch to clear my throat. Thanks for listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Happy trails.